Hello, and welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. My name's Katie Stoll.
Half of that sounds like a lie. I'm Cody Johnston.
Cody Johnston in the house.
Oh my gosh. Bark, bark, woof.
Bark, bark, howl, woof, y'all. Hey guys. Yeah. You know what? Happy World Plant Milk Day.
What?
Yeah. World Plant Milk Day. You know, that holiday where we celebrate the non-dairy milks of the world. We got your almond milk. We got your oat milk, your hemp milk, your coconut milk, your soy milk, your cashew milk, your coconut cashew blend, your hemp coconut cashew almond oat blend. You know, they've got a lot of options.
That sounds like too many options.
Too many options. I myself am an almond milk girl.
Okay.
Although I've recently realized almonds are bad for the environment. So I should probably start.
They take a lot of water.
I don't love almonds, so it's difficult. But today in my
But you don't eat beef either.
I don't eat beef. So that's, maybe it But today, they didn't have almond milk, to be clear, at the coffee shop. But I tried oat milk and it's nice. World Plant Milk Day would be an excellent time to introduce our new sponsor, Oatly, except they are not our new sponsor.
Oh.
They're just an oat milk brand that you should try if you're curious about experimenting with plant milk.
It's real?
It's a real thing, Oatly.
Okay.
They've actually got a very funny marketing campaign.
Oh, okay. Good for them.
Good for them.
It sounds like if you were to make up an oat milk company, you'd call it Oatly.
Yeah. Yeah, and they did that.
Yeah.
They did that.
Okay. They beat you to it.
Yeah. But no, we don't have an ad from them today. We don't have any ads today. Lucky everybody. Except us, because ads are good for us.
Sure.
But thank you guys for all of your lovely birthday wishes from last week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
thank you.
We had great birthdays.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I went just driving.
Yeah, I was there.
You were there,
I know.
Yeah. up the coast.
Yeah.
Played some mandolin, wrote some songs.
We didn't get our way through the entire catalog, but we decided to work through the different Beatles albums.
It's true.
And definitively decide which is the best Beatles album.
Nothing
was decided.
It's just generally pretty good.
But Magical Mystery Tour, underrated. It's got a lot of hits on there. People don't think about it.
I maintain that.
And then I went to Disneyland with some friends for my birthday. May or may not have done some mushrooms in the evening. May or may not
Oatly.
Be advisable that I talk about it on a podcast forum. But
I think it's probably
was
fine.
Really, really fun. Highly recommend. Yeah. 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah. The only time I've been to Disneyland, I was on the other one.
The acid.
Yeah.
Which I've never done. It scares me.
Mm.
But I hear it's very similar or...
It's not.
Not similar, but like as safe as mushrooms because it's made in a lab or whatever. We're not advocating that. I'm just saying that's what I've heard from
you. We're
just
advocating for Oatly milk because that's the real drug was the oat milk that you drank all along.
Well, let's get started. Let's talk about some stuff.
Dive.
There are things to talk about.
Into the pool.
We're going to try to do more stories, but briefer coverage. Today.
Yeah,
we're just going to test that out because there are a lot of stories and a lot of things are stuff that we've already talked about. Weeks like that are difficult because you're like, there's more to say. But
about this one topic that we've already covered,
you're kind of like
updating it. Yeah.
Repeating yourself. So.
This is a soft pitch. I'm going to throw this out there. I believe I've already discussed this with you. So we've got the news dump, obviously, later on.
Yes.
But now we're doing like shorter ones. We're doing them quicker throughout the episode. So I would suggest like, here comes the news piss.
Yeah.
No. It's the news whiz.
The news
whiz. Because we're whizzing by.
We're just taking the piss out of
exactly. Yeah. And then just like whizzing through the breeze.
Whizzing through the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Merch opportunity.
No.
I think.
Katie's face fell as soon as I said the news piss.
Yeah, it did. It did indeed. You know, I'm not a bathroom jokes kind of girl.
I understand.
I think that you guys know that by now.
Mm.
If I even say the word cum, it makes me cringe.
Mm.
It
yeah, just did.
To do
I
it.
Saw
now
it.
My
yeah.
heart fluttered.
I was going to say it because I know
like
how much you hate it.
Worse when you say it because you enjoy it so
it's,
much.
Yeah, it's so good.
I think it's the worst word.
I think it's great.
Ugh,
so, many, so many ways.
Moist, however, I have no problem with.
That's fine.
I'm eating a moist breakfast cake as
you know
we
it's
speak.
Moist.
What?
You don't want me to say it.
Donald Trump's genitals?
Oh, God. That's not... What? Let's move on.
What were you going to say?
Not that. Nothing.
What were you going
nothing.
To say?
I don't want to.
Well, now everybody's going to be dying to
oh,
know.
Oh, my God.
Let's talk about some 2020 stuff.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah.
Cleanse
yeah,
our
yeah.
palate. So we're recording this on Thursday. We normally record on Wednesdays because on Tuesday, I got this, like, text from Elizabeth Warren, her personally, mm-hmm. I'm positive, about a town hall in L.A., and so I went to that last night. I'll say that I didn't learn anything new, but goodness gracious, I do love her. I love her energy. One thing I was just blown away by, and I guess I shouldn't be, we should expect this from a president, is just her energy, mm-hmm. how sharp she is, how authentic she is. And like, she's a politician. You know she's a politician. I always have to remind myself when I start liking a candidate a
oh,
lot.
Oh, yeah, you can't get
anybody who wants to be president has got to be crazy.
A little bonkers,
capacity.
Yeah.
A little bonkers. But she is authentic. She told her story and then used that as an opportunity to talk about some of the big ideas and her plans. You know, by no means was it comprehensive, but I'm sure a lot of you guys know this, but just in case, you know, Elizabeth Warren grew up in a really like low income, working class family. Her mom was a stay at home mom and her dad suffered a heart attack, I believe, at a young age and then like couldn't work. And they almost lost their house. They lost their car. And her mom, having never worked, had to like, you know, put on her one nice dress and she marched herself into a Sears and got a full time job. And that saved her house and gave them an opportunity. And that was a minimum wage job. And that was enough. Like, that's her whole thing. Like, there was a
yeah,
time
it was enough
when
at that time, yeah.
you could have a, you know, a minimum wage job and support your family and keep your home. And that is obviously not the case now. And so that was kind of like, you know, her origin story. Yeah. And she went to college, but then dropped out when she got married and then eventually put herself through, you know, a four-year program while, you know, commuting, like commuter school kind of thing, while working as a waitress, and then worked as special education, then got fired because she was pregnant and there weren't protections back then. Mm. So then she put herself through law school and she became a professor and then, you know, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. But it's a real testament to how much somebody can do with just even a basic
right. So I would, what needs to change?
What needs to change?
If you, like, if you can do that, if you can have, you know,
well,
your
you can't really
mom and then you has a heart attack, so he can't work, and then you get a wage job, and you do that, and you go to school, you drop out, you go to right. that, and you do that, and suddenly you're running for president. It seems like the country's doing fine.
You would
so.
Think that, but things have changed, and people don't have those opportunities. College is,
well, change is bad.
Is expensive.
Change is bad and scary.
Bad.
So, exactly.
You know,
so, you keep it the same. So, it's the same as it was, is what you're saying.
No,
it's
no,
the same
I'm,
as it was.
I'm actually not saying that at all.
It's the same.
It's not the same.
So, it's fine.
Are we going to keep doing this bit
no,
for
nothing
a while,
has to change.
Or are we going to talk about?
All right. Okay. Okay.
Big things that she talked about, money and politics. Her plan to end, you know, she talks about big structural change and what that means to her and lobbying as we know it. Now, a lot of people, I get some pushback online, like not all lobbyists are bad groups, you know, Planned Parenthood, for example. But I would argue that taking the money out of it makes it more of an even playing field for all sorts of organizations and places that don't have money.
Like, lobbying is bad.
Lobbying is bad. I mean,
it's
people
not
are still going to make their case. They're just not buying votes.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I don't know what that means, lobbying and lobbying as we know it. So
a lobbying as we know
phrase.
It, invented by Paul Manafort and Roger Stone.
Right. So, you know, I think people are still going to be advocating for the things they believe in, just not paying off people. You know, and she talked about closing the revolving door between lobbyists and Washington.
Heard that before.
Heard that before. She talked about her 2-cent tax on the wealthiest. Mm. So people who make $50 million, like your first $50 million are fine. After that, you get taxed 2 cents.
Make it.
For the dollar. But even with that, according to her, according to her plan, she can provide universal pre-K. Mm-hmm. She can provide all sorts of stuff. 50 billion, I think she said, million. It was hard to tell in a crowded room towards
guaranteed maternity leave.
Guaranteed maternity leave. Black colleges like that 50 million or billion. I'm sorry. It's very difficult in a crowded room to hear every single word with people cheering over, you know, to black universities for guaranteed access to community college, technical colleges, and absolving student loan debt.
Mm.
I think that's pretty incredible. That's pretty concrete.
Counteroffer. Make it 10 cents.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
You could do a whole lot more with that. Mm. But I think, you know, it's like focusing on all education-related things, I think, is smart.
$50 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, and she talked about universal health care. I didn't get specifics on what that means to her or like how that plan would be.
Yeah, and that's a little more from her about that.
It's hard in this process.
A lot of people seem to be separating from the Medicare for All idea and like doing their own thing.
It's hard during this when you have X amount of time in a room full of people with attention spans to get specifics. And that's what's frustrating about the whole process, I think, for me. It's like, well, give me more specific details so that I know that your plan is the one that I want to fight for or not. But she did say the words.
That's
Medicare
good.
For All.
That's good.
You know, and she talked about how vital it is, how people need that, how like we pay into this as a safety net for everybody. There's babies that need millions of dollars in healthcare out of the gate for whatever reason.
That talk kind of changes too. Like there's reasons to call that and the safety net is there, but like people are so turned off by that phrase of like the social safety net and that. And we don't talk about like, we talk about the military. It's not like, oh, the wards. Like it's, there are things that we just expect.
Yeah.
And I think we need to start talking about healthcare as being a thing that you can have as a thing that we expect.
Yeah.
Not as like this safety net or like, oh, in case you get on hard times, you can have this. It's like, no, everybody, this is what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
I want more of that from folks.
Yeah.
The difference between like healthcare and insurance and like just the way we talk about it, I think it obfuscates the point that like the easiest way to say it is healthcare is a human right. And like, that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying.
Right.
Well, we'll see how that evolves.
You know, at this point, I think everybody listening knows that I'm pretty far in on Warren. I really like her.
I mean, not like, oh, ew, her, but just like, that's really graphic and like, that seems inappropriate that you're really deep in on her.
Well, everybody wants to come.
Ah, there we go.
Ew, you hate it. But I think it's fair to offer things that are criticisms at this point, obviously. Mm. And I want to bring up, you know, she's against corporate money and these big donations, but she recently hired somebody to run her finances.
The treasurer for campaign. I forget the name, but like referred to as like the Pac-Man. Like,
yeah, he's got deep ties. He's very wealthy. He makes it rain money.
Yeah.
So that is something to be aware of. It seems like strategic. Somebody that knows how to get money, but on the surface, we're not taking big corporate donations. Not that that is what's going to happen, but it's something to be aware of and to watch. The other thing. And I don't know if this is a real criticism, but it's just something that I noted. One of the questions was about Black trans women and how do we guarantee protecting them?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, huge applause from everybody asking that question. And I wasn't satisfied with her answer. I mean, she talked generally about, you know, criminal justice reform and stuff like that. But the only thing that she spoke to about that was like, well, her plan is to like new standards on policing and where we go out of our way to protect them, specifically those vulnerable communities. And like, that's cool, but it seemed like kind of a generic answer that is hard to implement structurally.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like,
I mean, that's super vague. And also like, I don't know how convincing, like, what are you going to do about this? Police.
Yeah. And
like that's
to be honest, I don't know the answer. There's lots of different ways to approach it, I think, but I would have appreciated a more thought out answer. But other than that, very impressed with her performance. And again, her energy and her authenticity. Like,
do you think that might contrast with a certain candidate that we want to go away?
I think
her energy might be a little.
And that's what I wanted to get it around to. Like, she's sharp.
Mm.
She is youthful. She has energy. She's
just ramble on about the 60s and 70s and how like women
we're
going
to get to that in 1 second. We're going to talk about Biden gaffes. This is my transition to that. But it's a stark contrast. And listening to, there was a lot, there weren't as many young people there as I thought. There were plenty of young people, but there were a lot of older people. And I heard some of them grumbling, like, not enough young people here. And I was like, I'm impressed that there's this many older people, because a lot of them would tend to skew towards Biden. But overhearing their conversations for literally hours, because I was in line for so long and waiting for so long, was a lot of like, yeah, Biden just seems to be slipping. Like, I don't know, I like him, but, you know, he just doesn't.
Yeah, ooh, that's so tasty.
And then people saying like, some 70-year-olds are fine, but you know, my dad deteriorated quickly. So that was heartening to me.
That's very interesting. Yeah, we'll talk
about... Not that that's much of a sample size, this group of people from L.A., but...
No, well, you know. But that's... I mean, that's what we've been talking about a lot of, like, Joe Biden, the reason he's so popular in the polls, A, his voting bloc is skews very, very old. It's because there's this idea that he's the most electable.
Right.
And the and media feeds into that. And so people buy it. And so they answer the polls that way. And so then they report on the polls that way. And it's sort of feedback loop that isn't really grounded in much. And we've been talking about, like, well, the more time passes and the more people see him and learn about his record and hear him talk about the things that we'll talk about, that reaction will happen.
Well, let's talk about the things.
So that's just that is kind of heartening to know that, like, okay, yeah, people see it. It's just.
Over the last few weeks, there's been just a bunch more Biden gaffes. You know, there was that one where he said poor students or whatever are just as smart as white students. Mm.
He corrected himself, but he did say that.
But he didn't say that. That speaks to something in his psyche. Mm. Like, it just does.
I mean, there's like, we've covered it before. There's so many things like that where it's like, what's your real perspective on this? Like, what's coming out there?
He said, you know, talked about Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. being shot in the 70s, in the late 70s. He means the late 60s. You know, like, obviously,
going back and forth.
In the scope of things, it's not the hugest deal.
I'm being like, oh, women won't understand, but men might remember the civil rights movement. It's like, what?
It's just awful. And then
women don't remember the civil rights movement?
And then what did Jill Biden tell us about the Jill Biden thing yesterday?
Jill Biden is doing her pitch. It's not a great one. She's just talking like it's the stuff that everyone says about him of like, oh, but he's the guy that can do it in the general. And she's like, you know, and some people might have like a better like healthcare plan than him. But it's about who's going to win in the general. And it's this weird like, hey, dude, you're his wife. And that's like the best pitch you have for him.
Yeah, that's what you got.
But also,
he gives great massages.
Right. But also, healthcare is consistently the number one issue for voters.
Huge cheering at the rally yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in the midterms, it's been sort of going back and forth with just like generally the economy and healthcare. But healthcare is almost always the number one issue for people who are voting. If your pitch is, sure, his healthcare plan might not be very good, but he can win votes when the voters care about healthcare.
It's absurd.
Maybe it's a little bit absurd. It's just this sort of clear damage control where they know it's going to be falling apart. You see that story about how Obama, before Biden announced, he's like, you know, you don't have to do this, Joe.
Right.
Because he doesn't. And so I think a lot of people around him kept telling him that he shouldn't and doesn't need to do it. But he really, really, he has this idea of like, I'm the guy to beat Trump. I think he stepped aside in 2016. And when he saw how it was going, he's like, I wish I was doing that. I could do it. And it's this sort of ego thing.
And I know polls shouldn't be relied upon. I get that. They're just like random snapshots of this moment in time. And
people who answer their landline.
Right. But I don't know what the polls say now, but there have been times when a lot of our top candidates are polling better than Trump were at that moment. They would beat him. And like, again, not something to bank on, but like, I think people push way too hard that Biden is the only person that can beat him. We've beat that drum plenty of times.
Yeah.
You guys get it.
Just another little bit of damage control that they're clearly doing. Biden's doctor.
Oh, yeah. What was
came
that?
Came forward and he's like, he's doing fine. He had like brain surgery in like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, and it's fine. Like everything worked great and there's no brain damage. And it's like, you need someone to come forward and say that he doesn't have brain damage? That's not great. That's not a great sign.
It's because he's doing so many dumb things.
Yeah. Anyway, it's whatever.
If you guys missed that, that happened. Don't worry about his brain damage.
And speaking of somebody who should primary Donald Trump, apparently Joe Walsh is thinking about it.
Oh.
We got opinions about Joe Walsh, but...
he's better than Trump.
Well, see, I think this might open the floodgates.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of been happening over the last, like, 12 hours or whatever. If he does it, other people might consider it. Like, I mean, Mitt Romney wants to. He's just a coward. Maybe this will sort of open it up, and then we'll have a really, really bad time with that for a while. And
All right, let's move on. Enough about Biden.
Oof.
Beto has been put on a bit of a show lately, guys, after suspending his campaign to visit El Paso, receiving a lot of positive attention for, you know, talking real to
swearing. He's a swear. He's a skater.
He has relaunched his campaign. And to me, it feels like he's making this effort to style himself now as this, like, outspoken, angry millennial. It's a definite shift because he didn't have an identity before. He was just some random white
Yeah, he was sub-Jeb.
He was a sub-Jeb for sure, and he still is. But now, you know, he's saying things that are important, but obviously political, you know, about how this country is racist. It was founded on racism. True. Again, you know, I'm glad somebody says it, but again, defining himself.
And this, yeah, it's a clear like, pivot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll and that, like, at this point, he has to know that he doesn't have a real shot at the presidency. But he does have a shot at the Senate. In Texas.
Well, he also has a shot at the vice presidency, and I think that's why he's not. He wants to be Elizabeth Warren's.
We don't need him as a vice president.
No,
he would do much better in the Senate, but currently he's refusing to do that.
Like stubbornly so, like
stubbornly.
Even like to the point where it's not even like people saying, "Hey, Beto, you should not do this. You should run for Senate." And he doesn't respond. He's literally saying,
"Well, he did.
Yeah.
He made a comment, a speech.
Exactly. Yeah.
He said there have been some who have suggested that I stay in Texas and run for Senate, but that would not be good enough for this community. That would not be good enough for El Paso. That would not be good enough for this country. We must take the fight directly to the source of this problem." Yeah, but you don't have to be the person that takes the fight to the source of the problem. You would be better served fighting for." And learning, growing up a bit.
Yeah, a lot of issues with that statement. A, being the senator of Texas isn't good enough for your community.
Right. Right.
What?
What are you talking about,
Beto? The fuck, man.
Yeah.
But also, he's said things like this, and some people still talk like this. Biden, for sure. But we must take the fight directly to the source of this problem. The source of this problem isn't Donald Trump.
Right.
I don't know if he really thinks that or if he's just saying it because he's just saying it. But he's not the source of the problem. He's a symptom of many problems, and he is a problem. But when he talks like that, it just sort of tells me that he doesn't really get it.
Yeah.
And he's playing into like what the media wants him to say and wants him to be. And again, we'll talk about the media sort of pivot to kind of exactly what Beto's talking about a little later, but like this just says to me that like Beto, you don't really get it, and you're just kind of saying stuff because you want to be president. It's like this ego thing. If you really cared, literally the same day that he made that statement about like it's not good enough, we got to go to the source of the problem. The senator who he'd be running against, John Cornyn, started tweeting stuff about like about climate change that was wrong. Like, and it's like someone said something, and he's like, it's summer, Chuck. It's just this weird snide thing that's dismissive of climate change. On the same day, he's like, I don't want to run for Senate. The source of the problem are these people. Like, you know, that's not true either. We're not going to talk about the system right now and all the structural issues. But like, John Cornyn's a problem.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
Maybe.
Come on, Beto.
Come on, Beto.
You mentioned the media, so let's talk about that. So this transcript of a New York Times meeting got into the hands of Slate, who published them. The New York Times taking a lot of hits lately.
Mm.
It's not looking too good. You know, last week people were angry with them for publishing a piece with the headline "Trump Urges Unity Versus Racism," which, like, we shouldn't even have to explain why that's an unacceptable headline at this point. It's just promoting the narrative that Trump wants. But basically, these transcripts illustrate that after the Mueller report, the paper will shift focus of its coverage from Russia to the president's, quote, alleged racism. This is dumb.
Problem.
It's a problem. First of all, you should be talking about his racism the whole time. Like, we shouldn't be dealing with headlines like that. They've called things racist in the past. You should call the president what it is and not pander, you know, and try to toe the line. End of story on that.
Right.
But like this, that whole thing is just giving the other side a narrative to push. And like already you see it online, but I see it everywhere now. And I tweeted about this the other day. You know, people saying like, oh, the Russia investigation turned up nothing. So now they're going to push this racist narrative. And it's like the Russia investigation didn't turn up nothing. Mm. It turned up proof, evidence that he's a criminal, you know, that he's obstructed justice, at the very least, just because Mueller isn't. They're just skewing that.
Yeah.
You guys all know what I mean. And we've been saying he's racist the entire time. And so it's just frustrating to me, adding to the chaos online.
Making a specific move to talk about this, like it's a clear, like, well, this is our narrative now. And so we're going to talk about this because that's what we like. That's where we want the conversation to go. It's like, well, no, no, no. You're
it's not a narrative.
You're the newspaper.
Yeah, you're putting the news out.
You report on what happens and you contextualize things and so on. But like, you don't choose what we talk about.
Right.
And again, yeah, he's been racist this whole time. Literally. The first thing he said when he said he wanted to be the president was that Mexicans are rapists and murderers. So, like, that's not confusing.
Right.
But, like, this shift of, like, now we're going to talk about this because that's the narrative that we want to push. It's just on its, like, it's what everyone complains about when they talk about, like, the mainstream media. That's what they're complaining about, among many other things. And, like, in conjunction with, like, the Beto pivot and things like that, it's like, oh, so you're just... You're just all like going all in on this when there are a lot of other things to talk about.
Yeah.
And probably news will happen and you won't be able to force it into this construct that you have ready to go. I don't know. It's a bit bunk. It's another way that everyone's going to get really mad at the media and Trump's going to play it up because he's an opportunist and doesn't actually care and is a very sensitive little boy while people are making legitimate critiques of it.
Yeah.
In good faith for real reasons. And then he's going to play those up and take advantage of them. It doesn't make me look forward to the coming months in the year because it's just another thing that people can point to of like the media is clearly like doing this and X and Y. And Trump's going to take advantage of it and play it up. And but for his own like selfish opportunistic reasons. And just on that, before we take a break, we were talking about like a lot of 2020 candidates and the coverage and like Beto's pivot. And there's something I think you've started to notice a little more about Bernard Sanders and the coverage of him.
Yes.
And I keep seeing it more and more. And it is frustrating the narrative that they have chosen for him and avoiding any positive coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen like polls by MSNBC and people like that. Who've literally said like, ooh, look at all these matchups against Trump. And it's like Biden, 53% wins. Bernie, 52% wins. Elizabeth Warren, 51%. Kamala, 50%.
Right.
But the order in which they list them is out of order.
Yeah, it's weird.
They like go out of their way to take him and put him lower than the actual numbers line up.
Sometimes, I haven't seen that specifically, but
I've seen several examples of that specifically. But things like that where like you look and you're like... But you're literally ignoring this other, like, very prominent figure because they're scared of the things he's saying. Literally yesterday, he tweeted about class warfare. And, like, even the narrative of, like, the angry young white Bernie bro boys. There's these profiles of supporters of all these candidates. And if you look at it, you'll see that of all the candidates, Bernie has, it's like, what, 44% of his supporters are from urban areas. 34% are under 30, which is a voting block we should probably care about and try to get to vote. 53% are women, which is more than any other candidate. 49% are white, which is fewer than any other candidate. So like, it's just like everything
anyway,
is very skewed. My point is that like
they're accurately representing him in the media.
Yeah. And I'm not going to hammer on it too much because I know that probably gets obnoxious, but it is very.
I mean, we've talked about it a lot.
We've talked about it, but it's very apparent.
But
and,
it's just something that I think you guys should. Keep in mind and be aware of as you're reading and processing all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Also, today he unveiled Bernie, a $16 trillion Green New Deal plan that would create 20 million jobs. And
that's a lot of jobs.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be back to talk about news, even more of it.
Prove it.
Today's episode of Even More News is brought to you by... Our TeePublic store.
.com/somemorenews
This is terrible. But yes, today's episode of Even More News is brought to you by our store that you should go to and buy merchandise. And while you're at it, you should send us pictures of yourself with that merchandise. And we will be happy.
Couldn't have said it better.
Couldn't you have though? What's the URL again?
I believe it's tpublic.com/user/somemorenews.
That's
but
correct.
Honestly, if you Google Some More News and tpublic, you'll find it.
Yeah.
Same as Some More News and Patreon, you'd find it.
Yeah, you'd find that.
Some More News Twitter. Some More News YouTube. Like there are all these ways to find.
You can find us online.
Us.
We are online.
Yes, very online. Thank you for listening to this advertisement.
End of ad. And we're back for even more news for yous. Clues. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're back for even more news.
It's true. It's true.
Not just 2020 news either. We're going to talk about the actual news, and maybe we're actually going to piss right through it this
Ooh.
Time. Because we talked about that longer than I expected.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad. It's good. This is organic.
Weezing
this is natural.
In the breeze.
But now we're going to talk about some serious shit. Background checks. After El Paso and Dayton, after those shootings, which were only a few weeks ago, but mm-hmm. somehow seem like years, President Donald Trump spoke words about gun control laws that he pretended to mean. Those words included sentences committing to stronger background checks, immigration reform, and dealing with mental illness. He said at one point, quote, mental illness and hatred pull the trigger, not the gun. Cool.
Hatred of who and why?
Yep.
Mr. Trump.
So we'll get to that.
Hatred of who and why?
First background
Mr. Trump.
Checks. Unsurprisingly, he has already walked back those words and sentences on background checks, just like he's done in the past after other mass shootings. Just a few days after the shootings, Trump reportedly called Wayne LaPierre, who is not apparently a character from True Detective. No, he's the CEO of the NRA. Similar, but
they
different.
Do a lot of calls after
of
shootings.
Calls. Yeah.
Before these announcements.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Anyway, he called Wayne to tell him that universal background checks were off the table as a legislative response to the shootings. And this happens because, you know, the NRA is a big supporter of Trump.
Mm.
And his base just fucking loves their guns.
You can love guns and also want background checks.
Yeah, yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, like, you know, our friend Robert Evans.
So no background checks, but yes, immigration reform.
What else did he say? He said, I said it 100 times. It's not the gun that pulls the trigger. It's the person that pulls the trigger. He called Democrats weak on the Second Amendment and said new gun rules would amount to a slippery slope aimed at punishing gun owners. You know, quote, all of a sudden everything gets taken away and we're not going to let that happen. Despite that not even being an option on the table, it's not like people are saying.
No, he said slippery slope.
He said slippery slope. But like, that's not legislation that's been in the works. He's
well,
just, you know,
he said slippery slope.
He's fear-mongering and he's really good at that.
Yeah, he is.
That's.
Background checks will lead to taking everybody's guns.
Unsurprising and depressing. Let's talk about his mental illness claims. Apparently, federal health officials were barred from posting anything on social media about mental health and violence without prior approval from Trump, you know, or from the administration after he had, you know, said that mental illness was to blame for the mass shootings.
Yeah, there's a memo circulating in Congress, Republican members of Congress, basically whenever like El Paso or like the invasion stuff is brought up, basically telling them pivot to left-wing violence and mental illness.
Right.
Congress. Republican members of Congress passing this around. In general, it seems not like an honest approach to what's going on. Well, also, so like mental illness, there's just so much to say, and I'm probably going to do like an episode about this, but I think it's telling that when he's talking about this, he's not saying mental health, because that's actually and something like Bernie's talked about, but like something that's helpful. I think we as a nation, we all feel isolated and anxious about a lot of things. And a lot of that stuff manifests itself in these fears and leads people down certain paths. And if like mental health therapy, things like that were available to everybody who needed it or wanted it.
In general, we'd be a healthier country.
In general, we'd be a healthier country. Also, I mean, like there's some comment he made about mental health and mental illness that people were up in arms about. But what he was really talking about was that we as a nation are experiencing like kind of PTSD from all these shootings. Mm-hmm. Like it happens very regularly, more than other places. And there was that one clip of a motorcycle backfired in Times
right.
Square. Everyone ran. Like, people are terrified. There's like, I forget the exact numbers, like 34% of people take into account where they're going in terms of like, if I go here, could I get shot in a mass shooting? And they avoid those places.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I think about sometimes. When
yeah.
I'm in big groups.
It really weighs on people. So that's a whole other thing. But like this sort of demonization of people with mental illness in general is really gross. And that's the slippery slope, you know?
Yeah.
That's really where it is and where you're targeting people. Because like mental illness isn't like, it's not like a bad thing. you know, it's not, it's like this sort of stigmatized phrase that you can sort of blame.
It's not something to be ashamed of. It's something that we should support people in helping to get treatment of and not stigmatize.
Right. And like when you're talking about this, he's talking about like a database of people with mental illness. Like that's a dangerous, slippery slope. It's opening all these institutions up.
Horrifying.
And like, it's very horrifying. And that's, it's very telling that that's where he goes with it. Mm-hmm. This sort of like fascist mindset of like targeting vulnerable people. And blaming these vulnerable communities for things that aren't really their, like, it's not their fault. It's not, like, the cause of it.
Yeah.
Even when you're talking about, like, violence and, like, gun violence specifically, the idea of going, like, oh, it's clearly just, like, mental illness. It's actually, like, it's domestic abusers.
Right. It's so much more complicated than that. It's, like...
Mostly. Like, if we're really going to talk about that, like, well, maybe if you've been charged with domestic abuse, then you shouldn't be able to own a gun.
There's conflation with mental of mental illness with violence.
Yeah.
When those are two separate issues, you could be mentally ill and also abusive. And, you know,
you could also be have a mental illness and not have any like of these problems.
And you like, could also
The whole thing is gross. And like, I know it's hard to talk to, too, because I want to be sensitive about the whole subject. But it's just very concerning how where he's going with this. And again, I don't want to like alarmist and like, oh, he's got the camps. Like, but like that's who people like him and this kind of movement.
We should be alarmed.
Right.
I don't want to be alarming, but we should be alarmed.
Well, right. Like that's who goes to these places. Like that's he's like demonizing this whole idea. And like I keep seeing like even more and more specifically online. I'm not talking about like Nazis online. I'm talking about like just like people and conservative figures talking about like the Jewish left trying to destroy the nation from within. That is fashy as fuck.
And we'll get to that.
Like that is severely like fascist rhetoric. And like that's this where these people's minds go of like, well, we got to we put the immigrants in there. We put homosexuals and anyone transgender. We put anyone with mental health issues, disabled people like that. Those are the communities that that are affected by people like this because they don't think beyond their prejudices. I don't know.
Okay, now a quick update on immigration. Now, this isn't what I'm about to say is not being pushed as a response to the mass shootings, but you know, I'm putting it here.
Mm-hmm. Because he would like to do something about immigration in response to that.
But the latest immigration reform coming down the pipeline is that on Wednesday, the president announced that they want to end the Flores Agreement. The Flores Agreement is named for Jenny Flores, who was a 15-year-old immigrant in the 80s. She was detained in dangerous conditions with adults, and the agreement was created, imposed strict rules regarding the detention and release of undocumented children in the U.S. government custody. Like they'd be required to release children into the custody of licensed care professionals or programs within 20 days, have access to sanitary facilities, medical treatment, et cetera, contact family members. And ending this agreement would allow the president to detain children indefinitely. It's awful. This is one of the most blatant and strict things that has happened. And it's just depressing. It's like it doesn't even matter that we've spent years protesting and fighting against these child detention facilities and policies, but we're just making it worse.
Yeah. And they've been, I mean, this is an argument they've made before. Like the Flores Agreement has come up a lot about these facilities, from Obama. Like they've argued against the Flores Agreement under Obama about a lot of this stuff. But even recently, I think we've mentioned on the show that like toothbrushes and blankets don't apply.
Right.
Things like that. And so there's just always been this sort of war on the Flores Agreement to avoid treating people with humanity.
Blows my mind.
Yeah. There's a theme emerging in a lot of stuff we talked about and stuff we're going to talk about and just like living in the world today. It's very frustrating because everything that we seem to talk about and bring up is stuff that people have been sounding alarms on for years. This, like, I mean, even when they said that they're not, well, it's not our policy. We're not detaining them for X amount of time. Right. We're not separating them into this. Well, no, you are. And you can see evidence of people saying they literally are doing that for that reason. And like, it's a lie. And then you're like, well, what are they going to do next? And like, well, now they're trying to get rid of this thing.
Yeah.
So like, it's just every single thing that happens. Like, yeah, remember when we talked about that? And it's like the invasion stuff. Like, remember for 2.5 years, for 3 years, we're like, well, if you call it an invasion, you're going to maybe make these people like it's...
You're going to see people treating it like an invasion, like a war.
Yeah, it's like this natural...
guarding our borders with their guns.
Right. And it's like, and you're also like making specific people fearful. These people who already are and who already are like waiting for the civil war and stuff like that. They're ready for it. And so... maybe don't do that, and then it happens for 3 years, and then terrible things happen. And this is another example of, like, what have we been talking about?
Yeah.
It's very frustrating to watch everything play out as we've been saying it would play out.
And it's hard, because we all know. We see it. There's just nothing that we can do except vote, I guess.
Vote and be mean to people online. Like, it's very frustrating because we don't
see protests not really happening, you know?
And I'm trying not to... as much anymore. It's just very, it's because the way our society works and structurally, like we've talked about all the voting problems and just like the money in politics and how even public polling doesn't affect how politicians vote. The money does.
Yeah.
If the public believes something for decades, nothing will be done on it until the money is there for them.
Absolutely.
And that's disgusting too. And so
Vote Elizabeth Warren.
we've gotten to this point where like all these structural changes, all these things that we need to have happen, or even like a slight change, you feel powerless.
Yeah.
And so you yell into the void online, and things like
mean
that.
Jokes.
Yeah. And then when things happen that you've been yelling into the void for years start happening, you're like,
there's not even the sick satisfaction of being right.
Right. No, it's upsetting. It's horrible. It's more and more upsetting. And like, even talking about the mental illness stuff, in a year, we're going to see headlines that are worse. And that's going to be really terrible.
Yeah.
All these attacks on like transgender people, like we're going to see more headlines because it's a proxy war for their war on homosexuality. Like it's all this stuff. Like I understand the frustration and that sort of feeling of powerlessness.
Yeah.
And when certain people feel powerless, they resort to violence. And that's another problem.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Vote.
Vote for someone, Elizabeth Warren. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about Trump, the international relations wizard, the chosen one, the rightful king of Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big week for him.
Yeah, he's had a big...
Jewish loyalty. Let's dive into that.
Wait, that's all you're going to say about Greenland?
No, we're going to get to it.
Okay.
I titled that in my notes. That's the name of this section. It's just a little preview of where we're going.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned... Jewish stuff online. Let's dive in there.
Yeah, destroying the country from within.
Yeah. Jewish loyalty.
Where have I heard that before, Katie?
Yeah,
Where have we heard about that? Jewish people destroying the country from within.
It's so familiar. We'll Google after we're
done.
President Donald Trump on Wednesday doubled down on his charge that Jewish Americans who vote for Democrats are disloyal. If you vote for a Democrat, you're being disloyal to Jewish people and you're being very disloyal to Israel. This is following up on his comments on Tuesday that Jews who vote for Democratic politicians are either have a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty.
Mm.
And now even Jewish organizations and leaders all condemned these remarks as invoking anti-Semitic trope of dual loyalty. You might be familiar with that when we had to talk about it with the whole Ilhan Omar controversy.
Where she didn't say the words dual loyalty, but he literally is talking. Oh, God.
I know.
Even
Ben Shapiro has some words to say about it, although he did double down on the fact that the Dems are the anti-Semites and that Rashida Tlaib and Omar and Ilhan hate Jews.
Real quick about this.
Yeah.
This guy. Okay. So he is always hedging his bets. He's always like, well, it's probably this and this and this and this. It's not the bad version.
Yeah.
It's probably like he was just like talking. Like he's always doing this weird thing where he like twists himself into knots trying to convince himself that he's not supportive of like these racist people.
His tweet thread about it, I'm not even bothering.
No, don't bother.
It out loud. It was confusing. I'm like, what's your point?
Well, see, here's the thing about this. So if you look at it, and this is something that another one of his like tactics that he does, aside from like all the let's say nonsense, but he'll do these threads and he'll have a list of things and he'll be like, one, this statement, two, this statement, three, this statement, four, this statement.
That's exactly what it is.
And then it's five, if one and two are bad, yeah. but if for those to be true, it has to be four. And then, but if it's three, then it's fine.
It honestly doesn't track at
it,
all.
It doesn't track, but he lays it out like it's this sort of like, he's this master of logic laying out the only possibilities. And if these are true, then this couldn't possibly be true.
It's so dumb.
And it's an obvious thing. He does it all the time in exactly these kinds of situations, yeah. specifically about racism.
Yeah.
And it's so transparent, it's laughable on its face. Look out for it, because he does it all the time, and it's not logic, yeah. it's not reason, it's him trying to defend racist
anyway,
people.
We don't need to talk about Ben Shapiro anymore.
We don't.
But even he, I guess, was condemning it. But despite,
nope, he was not.
Despite all of this pushback, the president and his bloated bag of bones fought back and said, I'm the least racist person to ever hold office. Very not true. Okay. Greenland. Let's talk about Greenland.
Okay. Let's talk about King Greenland.
Because that was happening in the midst of this truly bizarre feud, I guess, over Greenland. And I honestly thought this was a joke. And I didn't want to pay attention to it because it's just fucking dumb. But it continued. And now we're in some sort of diplomatic ordeal. Of course we are.
Are we? Oh, God,
it basically, he starts tweeting and talking about wanting to buy Greenland. And apparently that's something that other presidents have considered in the past. But, like, it wasn't happening. And anyway, he starts... And apparently in the past, he joked, quote unquote, joked. Can we just trade them Puerto Rico for Greenland?
Joked
about it.
Good
yeah.
joke, bud.
Anyway, so he's talking and tweeting about it. And then the Prime Minister of Denmark, Mette Frederiksen, hope that's pronounced right. She was like, nah.
Oh, God.
No, she had no interest in discussing the sale of Greenland. Greenland is not Danish. Greenland belongs to Greenland. And I strongly hope that this is not meant seriously, calling the idea absurd. And then the president canceled his upcoming visit to Denmark, calling Frederiksen nasty, which is, you know, his favorite word for strong women who get in the way of what he wants.
Right. Who was being like, as nice as she
diplomatic.
Could, like, my gosh,
yeah.
like, she didn't say, this is a dumb fucking thing. No, you dipshit.
Awful.
Get out of here. Get out of here. No, she was like, oh, that's a little silly. And I don't know why he would bring that up. So I hope that he's kidding.
Unbelievable. And then also on Wednesday, in the midst of all of this, he totally jumped the shark and told reporters on the South Lawn that God had tapped him to lead the trade war with China. Quote, I am the chosen one, he says, turning his eyes up to the sky. What is happening?
Yeah.
I need the doctor to come out and talk about Trump's brain injuries his surgeries from the 80s.
A few things on this.
Please share.
It's just, there's so much to say about it. So real quick on the Greenland thing, apparently Tom Cotton is the one who suggested to him.
Oh my God.
I have several theories about this because because Obama was going, I believe, to meet as well. And it's in like 3 weeks after Trump. Mm-hmm. So some people are positing that like he didn't want the reception to embarrass him.
Okay.
So he canceled it. But it's probably just his, you know, he's got rat
Maybe
traps
Maybe it's
in
a
his
combination
brain.
Of both.
But I was thinking, like, there's a sense, like, in the way his mind works of, like, Greenland is more north. I think that Donald Trump believes in climate change and knows that it's real.
Yeah.
Because of course he does. They're all liars. And even though he calls it a hoax, he's put up seawalls at his resorts and golf
right.
golf clubs because he knows that the sea level is rising. Yeah. He knows for a fact. I imagine that he's having all these conversations with people about, like, you know, because there's smart people around him. They're just like craven lunatics who are like taking advantage of him or like think that they're going to be the one to solve everything or like help him not be a maniac, whatever. So people are talking about climate change and things like that. And in my mind, he's like, why don't we just buy Greenland? Why don't we have Greenland? It's right. far north. And if things are going to melt and get hotter, then Greenland will actually be nice for us. And so like then the rich
this
people
is just
can live.
Theory, by the
oh,
way.
Oh, yeah, no, this is not based on any fact other than he knows that climate change is real and his brain works in mysterious, interesting ways. I think he's inherently sort of expansionist in his aspirations in terms of being a president because that's how he views like power and stuff. But he also knows that war will make people like him less because he knows like a lot of his supporters are anti-war. So he's like, oh, well, then we'll just buy places.
Yeah.
But so the God thing. The God thing I do want to touch on real quick because he said he's the chosen one. He joked about that. That on that day, he also shared this passage from some right-wing pundit, Wayne Allen Root, I think.
Oh, right.
Calling like, what, the king of Israel?
Yeah.
Chosen by God, all this kind of stuff. And people are playing it off as like he was just quoting him. He was just joking about the chosen by God thing. A, if anyone else said that, would we take them seriously? Also, W. Bush said that God chose him to free Iraq. But his supporters do believe this. His supporters believe that he is chosen by God. There's a large group of people who think that he is like this, literally like the savior. That also leads down a very dangerous path. Yeah. That we should be concerned about. We're going to see more headlines about this in the future too, and we'll be like, oh my God, remember when we were talking about this and it was bad and still bad?
We're pretty much out of time, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention the fires going on in the Amazon right now. That's right. The Amazon rainforest has been on fire for weeks.
Yeah, rainforest is lit.
And, oh, you were holding on to that.
Yep.
No one even knew about it over here because it wasn't in the news until a couple of days ago, until a couple tweets started going viral. The fires are raging at a record rate in Brazil's rainforest, and it's a devastating blow in the fight against climate change. The Amazon supplies 20% of the world's oxygen, and it's burning at a rate of an entire football field each minute. Yeah, and then yesterday, Brazil's president, Bolsonaro, said the NGOs could be behind the fires in an attempt to ruin his and his country's image, but he offers zero evidence of that. On the flip side, environmental groups are blaming Bolsonaro. They have long been campaigning to, you know, save the Amazon and have been saying that Bolsonaro has relaxed environmental controls in the country, encouraging deforestation. In fact, a big campaign promise of his was to restore their economy by exploring, and by exploring, we mean exploiting the Amazon's economic potential.
Mm-hmm. He also, early this year, he signed an order giving his government more power over NGOs.
Right. It's crazy.
So perhaps he's lying.
Perhaps he's definitely
because
lying.
He.
Well, they fired the director of the NIPE, which I don't know what it stands for, but but apparently there was a spat with them, and they had the director defended this satellite data that showed the deforestation was like 88% higher in June than it had been a year earlier, and then Bolsonaro called those findings lies and fired him. I'm leaning towards Bolsonaro as a liar.
He seems like a liar. It seems like he's sort of pretty
lying,
fashy liar.
So this is just very upsetting and alarming.
It's on theme, and this is why I brought this up earlier, because this is something that people have talked about for a long time as well, talking about how this will lead to the deforestation of the Amazon. Bolsonaro specifically wanting to do this. Talking about like these orders that he signed and all this stuff he's been doing, talking about how this will lead to what is happening now. It's again that like you feel powerless. You're like, well, the Amazon's on fire.
I guess I'll talk about it on my podcast.
Right. Like literally like it's referred to as the lungs of the earth.
Yeah.
Like it's really important. And it's one of those things. It's like all the problems that have led us to this sort of era and that have brought us Donald Trump and that have brought us this frustration and this sort of rejection of like liberal democracy and these sort of things. Now you have these people who are literally burning it down to basically hoard and take advantage of it while they still can.
Yep.
Maybe that's bad.
Maybe it's absolutely
maybe that's
bad.
Really bad. I don't know. My brain is just trailing off right now.
It's fine.
It's so.
We all get what you're saying, and it's hard. It's hard because when we share stories like this, we want to come away with something tangible. We want to say like, but here's something we can do. And you know, weeks like this, stories like this, it's like, well, I don't know what to say other than this is what's happening.
Amazon is on fire on purpose. We have trouble controlling these kinds of things when they're not on purpose.
Yeah.
And it's on purpose.
I mean, it's not officially on purpose,
it's on purpose. And like, just the way this sort of, again, like this obfuscation of like the facts and the truth and like the intentions and you're just like screaming into the void like, but we need that.
Yep. We're kind of trailing off here. I did just remember that there's one other thing I wanted to mention for this week, and that's this Weight Watchers story real quick, because it's kind of personal for me. In case you missed it, people are pissed at Weight Watchers for releasing a weight loss app for children and young teens, and critics, including this critic
one, the one you're
right
pointing
here
yourself right now,
is talking in this microphone, say that this encourages
eating disorders. Yeah, and it does. The app was released on August 13th, and it's described as scientifically proven behavior change designed to help kids and teens aged 8 to 17
reach, 8 to 17. Oh my
reach
gosh.
A healthier weight. I was an overweight kid, and my doctor had me go into a weight loss program at like the age of 10. And that is something that I've struggled with my entire life. I joke about being the skinniest kid at fat camp, which is a great line for an autobiography. But I grew up thinking there was something wrong with me. And mm-hmm. that has formed who I am. I am a healthy person and I strive to be healthy. But I have thought about food and my relationship to it from a age that is way too young. And who knows what I would have been. Maybe I would be chubbier and happier. You know what I mean? If I hadn't like, but being told that there's something wrong with you that you need to work on mm-hmm. when you're developing and you're so vulnerable is
yeah,
truly.
Stare at your phone and fix yourself.
Talk to parents about how to feed your kids properly, proper nutrition. Don't give them hangups. Like, well, the one good thing about the class that I went to was that it was for parents and kids. So like the kids went and had a class. We learned about healthy eating choices and you exercised. We also got weighed in. That was embarrassing. But my mom would go off with parents and learn stuff about nutrition. And, you know, and that I think there's something helpful to that kind of education or like having parents having resources. But putting that on the kids is abhorrent, and it's telling them that there's something wrong with them. And I'm against it. If you have a kid that you're worried about their weight, do not use this app. This is not the way to go about it. And honestly, your kid's going to be fine. You know, let them grow up and be healthy and happy. And you do your best to provide them with nutritious things and encourage them to get outside and be active. But, you know, because that's healthy, but not because they need to lose weight.
Yeah.
That's my two cents. That's my two cents on a $50 million
profit. Yeah, you're well, yeah.
And I think that that's all the news that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
We ran through a lot of it.
Free breakfast and lunch for school kids.
Yes.
That'll help, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just trying to.
It'll help something. I don't know if that pertains to the Weight Watchers app, but.
I mean, if you encourage like education and health in school, and you provide, because you know, yeah, kids don't always have the resources to eat healthy at home. And
it confuses me. Like, I don't know what programs are like now, but I even wrote a letter to the governor when I was like 12 after I got out of this program, being like, I think that we need to change PE curriculum so that it includes. You know, it's not about negativity, but it's about, you know, learning about the proper things to eat and like how good it is for you when you have vitamin D, when you have these things and like what it does for your body. Never got a response.
Oh,
I was so dang precocious.
Who was the governor? I'm appalled that you didn't get a response. That's a good idea.
It is a good idea.
Good idea from constituent.
Mm. If you're a PE teacher, maybe think about that. All right, that's it. We're out of here. I'm going to go upload this so we can get it edited and released to the masses.
Today.
Yeah. Later today.
Mm-hmm.
Which you'll know when you listen to this. All right, we're done.
Breathe.
We love you very much, and we mean it.